Here at Australian True Crime, we often get contacted by listeners who have had really powerful personal experiences of the various ripple effects of crime. Amelia is one such listener, and today she is sharing her story with us.
This is Australian True Crime. Come with us as we explore how people become killers, how people become victims, and what happens next.
Her mum went to jail for several years, and Amelia says that from that point on, her childhood stopped and she was forced to grow up. That new reality included visiting her mum in jail, which has given Amelia the unique perspective and understanding of what life is like for children whose parents are also prisoners. Later, we will also speak with a representative from Shine for Kids, a charity that supports children with a parent in the criminal justice system.
Hi Amelia, it's Emily here. Thanks for talking to us for the podcast.
No worries.
Amelia, you contacted us via our Facebook page, and I just would like to ask you to explain to the people listening, like, what made you contact us?
Sure. I think my story is a story that the public doesn't usually hear. You don't really hear about the children of the perpetrators who committed a crime. This isn't a discredit at all to the victims of the violence. It's just that the children in these situations are innocent, and I think it's important for those children, for the children's side of the story to be told, and I want to tell that story.
And we were really intrigued when you contacted us, because really it is quite, it's a kind of unique position to be in. I mean, I don't know if you can enlighten us more on this, but, you know, it wouldn't be, you know, heaps of kids who have this experience, and especially for when you went through it. You're now an a young adult woman. But can you tell us a little bit about what happened to you, what your experience was? And I know for the listeners, Amelia has asked her parent who was in jail. She's told her about this podcast, but we're going to keep the details, you know, pretty loose so we don't, you know, I guess upset anyone. So Amelia, can you give us a bit of background about what happened?
Sure. Just before I go into the situation, well, the incident itself, I really just want to reiterate, my mum is an amazing woman. Before it all went down that day, I had a really good childhood, probably better than most of the people I've come into contact with. Made sure from a very young age we were aware of stranger danger and how to deal with life pressures. She reiterated to us that the world does have a lot of evil in it, and I think because she did do that, it strengthened me through life pressures later on in life. I don't think when she did install that into us that she thought she was going to do what she did.
Yeah.
However, I do think it was very important that she did put that into us. I remember, this is just a random thing, but I don't know if you remember this, when you were growing up, the stranger danger ads where they would teach kids to say, "Stop it, I don't like that," to strangers.
Yeah, I was of the generation probably a bit before where stranger danger kind of first came in, and it was like about safety houses and stuff. That's what I learned about.
Yeah, that I was coming to the, so when I was a child, that was coming to an end, but mum really pushed if anyone was to approach us and if there was something we didn't like, to scream at the top of our lungs, stop it, I don't like it. And I meet so many people now that were never taught that, which I find incredibly fascinating. It just shows you that she made us ready for life, I guess, even at a young age. Very long story short, about her crime, and to not go into it in too much detail, our family was being stalked for years. This person was calling us, breaking into her house, leaving threats for my mum in our mailbox about my sister and I's safety. She did go to the police about this stuff. It wasn't handled properly. I was young, so I don't know to the extent of what she did go to the police. I do have bits and pieces of memories of that and it not being taken as seriously as I'd liked and being a bit worried at how they'd taken it.
Yeah.
My mum being our protector, I think she just snapped after it all and she just couldn't handle it anymore, and she stabbed the person that was stalking us. From that moment, my life changed pretty dramatically. Again, I don't really think that's my story to tell in regards to what happened. I think the context and the parameters around that story is more my mum's story to tell.
Yep.
But I can tell, like, the main parts of it. Yeah, so, yeah, It was a pretty bad day. My sister and I were there when it happened as well, so we got, unfortunately, we dealt with a lot of that issue as well. So on top of mum going to jail, we were actually at the scene of the incident. So, we had to deal with that trauma on top of everything else. So.
It sounds incredibly frightening.
It was, I think the scariest part was the day it happened, that night. Nothing happened, and I knew something should have happened, even though I was so young to comprehend it. There was hours that went on, and nothing had happened after it. And, again, not to go into all the details.
Yep.
And then in the middle of the night, I think it was 2 or 3 a.m., we were woken by the police, my sister and I, and they told us to grab everything we would need. And I was 8. So being 8, I grabbed my coat and my doll.
Yep.
That's all I thought I needed. Yeah, At that age, I didn't think, this is going to be a long-term thing. So I'll need this and this and this. So I can't remember what my sister grabbed. I think it was very similar. My sister was a couple of years younger than me, so I can't imagine she grabbed any more than what I did. Yeah.
And so with a bit of context for the listeners, so it was, a serious enough crime that meant that, that's what happened to you. You were pulled out of your beds in the middle of the night and,
Sorry to cut you off.
That's okay.
So the police didn't really give us any context of what was happening. They didn't explain it. It was all very rushed. I was actually carried out of my top bunk.
Right.
And quickly ushed to grab my stuff. And that's no disregard to them and what they were doing. They had, I'm sure there was a lot more pressing matters going through their heads. And we had to walk through the house. And my mum and her friends were all cuffed to the ground. And there was no one like, your mum done a bad thing.
Yeah.
This is what's going to happen to her or anything like that. It was just purely, they had to walk past my mum, cuffed to the ground, and then into the police car.
That would have been so scary because when you're a child, your mum is your world, you know?
Yeah.
Your parents, everything.
And to not have her comfort us in that situation as well, just to see her not dealing, just to see her upset as well. And again, not having anyone go, hey, this is what's happening. Yeah, and I was thinking of this a couple of months ago because another friend of mine has had a very similar incident, but to the extent of mine. I don't think for weeks anyone told me what had actually went down and what the repercussions of what she'd done was.
Yeah.
Everyone kind of danced around it a bit. Even my dad and my stepmom actually didn't want to tell her what had happened. They wanted to just tell us our mum had deserted us, which is insane. And I'm so glad they didn't tell us that because I would have seen through that, seeing her cupped on the ground. But they just didn't want us to deal with that sort of stuff. And my mum fought and fought and fought for them to tell us the truth. And thank heaven she did because, I couldn't imagine them starting that lie.
Yeah, we've spoken to other family members, I guess siblings whose, brother or sister had been murdered. And they explain as a child, not being told the full truth and sort of everyone, not mentioning what happened. And that actually made it worse for them as time went on.
I had very similar. We weren't allowed to talk about it, but I can go into further who I lived with and all that stuff later. But we weren't allowed to discuss my mum being in jail, which was really hard. More in the fact just making new friends and not being able to hang out with your friends on the weekend because you had to go and see your mum in jail. And and not knowing that and missing parties or missing homework, like even just school homework, and your teacher not knowing that the reason you're tired or upset is not because it's normal teenage stuff, it's because you've got this whole other thing going on behind you, behind the scenes. And that was really hard to deal with.
So it's incredibly disruptive, only for your parent, I guess, who's going to jail, but your life is completely turned, turned upside down.
Yeah, it is. And it became a bit of a persona, more think it came out in high school. I feel like maybe I opened up to a friend, or maybe it was even a friend of my dad's child who spread it or something like that. Mm. But what had happened is it was so stupid. If I had a disagreement with someone or was fighting with someone, this rumor would go around. I don't even know what that stemmed from, and people were scared of me. And I'm not a scary person at all. If anything, I'm so loving and so affectionate, and most of my friends and family could tell that I'm someone to be relied on. I would never do something like that. Nor would my mum be like, yeah, I'm under the command of my daughter. It was really bizarre. And that was a constant thing. There was other things too, where I was in a fight in high school, and again, my dad and my stepmom weren't really equipped to deal with me. They had already had, they'd had three other kids before my sister and I went to live with them, and that was a whole nother. So I was supposed to live with my grandparents. Oh, I'll tell you about the custody battle afterwards. But my stepbrother and dad would often bring up my mum being in jail as a way, kind of like an insult if I did anything wrong. So I was in a fight in high school. This girl literally smacked my head into a side of a brick wall, and I retaliated. And when my dad came to pick me up from the school, before I could even explain what had happened, he told me I was just like my mother. He wouldn't listen to me at all, even though I told him that this girl had attacked me first. And then just other times, like when I would fight with siblings, or my stepbrother was way older than me and way stronger than me, and he would always start fights with me, and I would always get injured, and I would never really retaliate at all, but I would always get told that I'd obviously started it because I was my mother's daughter. Like, it was just a constant. So I guess, yeah, it was quite a stigma for me growing up.
So it's very traumatising for you. You know, as well as mum being in jail, you're getting blamed for stuff. Yeah, I'm thinking of, as you're speaking, someone we spoke to, her sister was murdered. And when she was growing up, people would, like, not, some kids weren't allowed to play with her because they said, oh, her sister's murdered, insinuating that her sister was somehow a bad person, or, you know, because there was a lot of media reports wrongly stating they were runaways, and she just had this persona, and people just, they didn't want their kids being around her, which seemed crazy.
That happened to me as well. I had a lot of kids from better socioeconomic backgrounds than my own, so my dad and my stepmom, and yeah, the same sort of things. People were scared that I was somehow involved in gangs or had connection in gangs. The stuff that used to go around school was super bizarre. I guess I probably didn't get as bullied as much as most kids because of that. So I guess in a way it kind of benefited me as opposed to some other kids. But it really outcasted me as well at other times because people didn't know what I was going through. They didn't know how to relate to me. It was really bizarre. I was remembering earlier, my sister, her and I was very lucky that I had a sister a couple of years younger than me going through the same thing as me, whereas a lot of people have to do it on their own, and I couldn't imagine that. In primary school, I think she was maybe 8 or 9 at the time, or maybe a bit younger, and it went around that our mum was in jail, and no one believed her, and she didn't like my... She didn't like my stepmom. My stepmom was very awful to us. And she brought the letter from jail to show and tell and hid it in her bag. And she got up in front of everyone with hands on her hips and was like, this is a letter from my real mother. And read all the things of my mom's daily jail and showed everyone, like, the stamp from the prison. And I was really jealous that she'd done that, which sounds ridiculous, but I just thought it was such a smart and proud thing to do, whereas most people would just be like, no, I'm going to hide away from this and I'm not going to handle this. But I also, at the same time, when I was just thinking about it, that it was probably a real cry for help. I think she just didn't have the emotional intelligence to tell people that she was struggling. And unfortunately, the way that they reacted to that was the teachers, had a go at her. She actually got punished. No, she got punished from the teachers and she got punished from my dad for doing that. No one was like, oh, are you okay? She got nursing. The teachers had to talk to the parents at the school. The whole thing was just overreacted. Yeah, and no one actually got her help, which is really sad.
And nowadays you would get help. That would be, I don't know, as enlightened as it is now. Yeah. And I get why she did it, because if people are telling you you're lying and you've got all this stuff going on, you're like, well, no, I'm actually not lying. This is the truth.
I just remember that. Her being like, this is a letter from my real mother. And she was just so proud because we were in the, you know, how they do 3 and 4 together and 5 and 6.
Yeah.
Like the grades together. We were actually in the same grade. And, the uproar was insane. Yeah.
It would have been a pretty interesting show and tell. Really.
Oh, well, all these kids were apparently traumatized with the terminology they used.
Please.
Yeah. But my sister didn't go into the crime or anything.
No.
She literally just said that her mom was in jail. And, again, I think that wouldn't have been the same reaction if there was better education around that sort of stuff.
Let's go back to when, so you're 8 years old.
Yep.
You get pulled out of your bunk late at night. Where do you go after that? What happens?
Yeah, so another thing I didn't mention is so when Mum got arrested, the police actually didn't lock up our house, so the whole house was left open.
Mm.
It was very fortunate that we went to go and stay with a family friend, and that family friend had gone to that house not that long after and grabbed, say, like undies, school clothes, all that sort of stuff, all the important stuff. And thank heaven she did, because our whole house was pretty much ransacked. Like, everything I owned was pretty much taken. All my dolls, all my toys, the leftovers of my clothes that she didn't grab, our TV, our couch, everything.
That's terrible.
Yeah, photos of us, which is really bizarre. Yeah, a whole bunch of stuff. My fish. So we pretty much started off with just the clothes in the garbage bag that lady had grabbed us. That my mum's friend. We lived with her. I think it was a couple of months. I know the court, like the sentence of my mum and stuff, didn't take very long due to the nature of the crime. But it was more the custody battle between mm-hmm. my sister and I, which took the longest amount of time. So we lived with her while that was happening, and during that time, we went to school not that long after. It was only a couple of days. They didn't allow us, you know, to see a psychologist or a counsellor or anything like that. We were just told to go to school. And we had the police come quite a few times and interrogate us at the school in a classroom. And that, again, caused fear. And after that, no one really wanted to talk to us. I remember the kids and stuff were scared of us because they didn't understand what had happened. And I don't know if anyone had really explained. They just saw police drag us into a room, and I guess they heard rumors of what had happened, and kids always exaggerate stuff as well at those ages. So yeah, and then from there, there was a custody battle between my grandparents, my uncle, and my dad and my stepmom. That took a long time because they all were, I guess, quite good candidates would be the word. The only problem was my uncle and my grandparents were, unfortunately, further away from where my mum was getting charged, so they were in a completely different state. So because we're in the same state as my dad and my stepmom, we were given custody to them. So they got custody of us. When I moved in with my dad and my stepmom, it was very clear from the beginning that my sister and I were add-ons to their perfect family.
Right.
And yeah, we were never really regarded as equal, and it was really apparent to things like Christmas and stuff like that. My sister and I had really horrible years living with them. And I, going to and from the jail, I met a lot of kids from the foster care system, and the stories they told me and the things that were happening to them never sounded as bad as what I was going through.
So how did you manage, so how did it happen that you would go to see your mum. How did you get driven? Did people take you? Did your dad and stepmom sort of help keep that relationship going with your mum?
So what was supposed to happen is the court ordered my dad and my stepmom to take us to the jail. That was what was supposed to happen. They never did that. They didn't want anything to do with having to sit with my mum, so they just didn't take her. So then my mum had to get a court order to go back to court to get her friends that worked at the Salvation Army to arrange for people to drive us, and she worked out who would be able to do what and the days that they, like the Sundays that they'd be able to take us. And yeah, they were amazing. Yeah, I can't thank them enough for what they did. They were just such beautiful people. They would take us in. They would always have like these nursery rhyme songs or High Five, you know, whatever their hit songs of yeah. children were. And you could tell that they hated it, but they would always make sure they had it on for us. And yeah, they would remember certain stuff that you had told them that everyone around you told hadn't paid attention to. And I guess they were kind of my therapy at the time. Yeah. And they would always buy us good Christmas presents. I think they felt for us a lot of the time too. I don't know if the Salvation Army offers that to everyone or if it was just something my mum was very lucky to be able to do. I do think because they did that for us, that's why I do so much community work on the side now, like as a thank you to their work. Yeah, they would even, on the way home, because my sister and I would be so emotional, we wouldn't want to go back to that life. They would get us Happy Meals and let us play in the park for a bit and, you know, just to unwind before we had to go back to home life. And that was the stuff that my dad and my stepmom weren't doing with us. I know they made a few comments about it at times as well.
So what kind of comments?
They would just say, it's not always going to be like this, be okay, things will get better, you know, this isn't all that there is to life. And they would just check in on us and, yeah.
That does sound incredible. So you would say you got a sense of hope from them?
Yeah, definitely.
And that's really important, isn't it? You've got to have hope that something's going to get better. And so when, what are some of the things that you really remember strongly about the times you'd go and visit your mum in prison? Like, was this weekly you'd go or fortnightly?
I think originally we were supposed to be going fortnightly, and then the whole incident of my dad and my stepmom not taking us, I think it got changed to, no, my mum decided that it was monthly. So my mum felt really guilty making us go weekly or fortnightly because she wanted us to be kids and to have a social life. Mm-hmm. She said that it would be unfair for us to have to go there every week, which I honestly wouldn't have minded, but she said as we got older it would be a real issue for us, which she was right.
Yeah.
When you're a teenager, it gets harder and harder to explain why you can't do Sundays. Visiting jail is pretty scary. It's weird at the start. When I was young, I was really, really scared of it. And then it just kind of became a routine for me.
Mm-hmm.
You go in with your parental guardian or a driver, so in my case, the Salvation Army person, and they sign you in and you get, say, a visitor's badge. And then you get checked to make sure no one smuggled anything on you. And when you're a kid, you're really honed in on that. I saw a lot of kids get taken into another room, which I assume means that their parents smuggled drugs on them, which, it isn't unheard of. And unfortunately, users need their drugs, and I guess in those situations, like, all they see is the drugs. So you're not allowed sunglasses, scarf, hoodies, or the other hats in. You usually have to put them in a locker. Sometimes you're allowed hoodies if it's cold. I think I had a bit more leniency because I was a child.
Mm-hmm.
Even in my teen years, it just depends who was on, I guess, in regards to the rules and regulations. You get to really know the guards as well.
Yeah.
They're really friendly and cheerful and always really nice. Again, discredit to my dad and my stepmom. They were really bad at sending my letters to my mum. So often my mum would actually pay for my stamps and send them to me to write back to her. And also, too, I would have heaps of art and letters I'd made in the interim, so you have to give it to the guard when you get in, and you're actually not allowed to give it to your mum then and there.
Okay.
They have to process it. So what they do is they put it aside, and mum would usually get it within a few days, which really sucked. So say you made this beautiful art and you wanted to see your mum's reaction, you never got that, which was quite awful. The only thing they really let you take through, and again, depends who was on. Sometimes there was people that would just open up photos, were usually okay, and certificates, any awards that you'd won and stuff, was usually okay to bring through. Yeah, Mum was telling me, actually a couple of weeks ago, that the main reason, because people smuggled drugs in artwork, and it was really common
to
get kids to do that. Yeah, and acid apparently in, like, under stamps and stuff was often found.
Like thin sheets of paper or something.
Yeah, mache stuff, everything. People would try everything, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that was the main reason behind it, and a lot of people in there will try anything to get it in, so... Yeah, I guess I was very fortunate. My mum's not one of those people. So, yeah. Or I was with anyone that would put me through that. Going through it all is probably going through, like, the scanner and all that. It's probably the best to explain, like, checking into a flight.
Yeah.
It's probably the best imagery I can think of to explain just how intense it is. And sometimes there's heaps of officers and sometimes there's only a few. And, yeah, it just depends, like, what's going on that day in the prison. I saw some horrific stuff over the years happen, even on Children's Day. I saw this lady, not even a metre away from me. Her child had been not allowed in because the person on the other end had actually smuggled drugs in that child's nappy.
Oh.
And the guards actually said that in front of my sister and I and my mum. And this lady just went berserk. She just started kicking all the windows and smashing everything up and throwing chairs and just going mental. And I don't know what power my mum had in there. I'm not really sure. I've never really asked. But my mum got up and just went over to her and was just like, sort your shit. And the lady just freaked out. Yeah. My mum was furious. And all the other ladies started getting up with their kids around.
Yeah.
And I think she realised what she was doing and what had gone, like... Yeah, so it must be a sacred thing in there. I'm not really sure, but I assume by the way everyone started arcing up that it's just a thing where that's the day you don't mess up.
After the break, Amelia tells us about the challenges her family faced when her mum was released from prison. Coming up on Australian True Crime, Amelia reveals more about the hardships her and her family faced when her mum was released from prison.
And because a lot of women in prison are mothers, aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. Huge percentage.
Yeah. Yep. It's just, this is such a fascinating chat, Amelia, because it's really things that you're saying, they're just things you wouldn't think of. And you know, a lot of people wouldn't know what the experience is like for a child when they're visiting their parent. How long was Mum in jail for?
So originally she was supposed to get 10 years, but she got 5 for good behaviour.
Okay.
So, yeah.
She was, so you're about, 14 when she got out?
15? Yeah. I think I was just about to turn 14, yeah.
I know when we were corresponding with our messages, Amelia, you mentioned that her being in prison was hard, but when she got out, that was hard too. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so when she got out, it was very difficult because I was kind of going between my dad and my stepmom's house, my mum and my dad and my stepmom's house constantly, so I was getting this haven. My mum also went through a bit of she went from having no freedom to all this freedom, so she was going through her own turmoil at the same time. It was just a very difficult period. It's a lot to put on. I was more a child, I guess, than a teenager at that age, and I was supporting my mum and helping my mum, but at the same time, I needed help. And don't get me wrong, she was very supporting and helpful with us, but the court just wouldn't give her custody over us. They were just, my dad had custody over my sister and I until we were 16. And that was a long way away still when I was 13. So, yeah, they played a lot of mind games with my mum as well. There was all these certain things, like my mum couldn't actually pick us up from the house, and she would have to pick us up from a location, but then they wouldn't take us to that location, and it was just all these little things constantly. And, yeah, the whole thing behind my mum and her dealing with it is her own story and her own issue, but, yeah, there was no I was not really given much support, actually, when she got out either. There was nothing offered. There was really nothing.
It just sounds so, the lack of support, I guess, the lack of want to understand what you were going through. And I know when we were talking that you very much wanted to tell your story because you wanted to, I guess, get across the message that kids need more support. And from your knowledge now about, say, you know, you're a child and your parents in jail, have things improved?
Yeah, definitely. When I was a kid, it was horrible. So visiting a parent in jail is a roller coaster. It's literally like you wait and wait and wait to go and see them, and then the whole time you're seeing them, in the back of your mind, like, oh God, I've got a couple of hours and then I'm not going to see them again.
Mm.
And then I'm going to go back to my normal life and I'm going to go back to all my pain and all my worries, and you feel very isolated. You feel ashamed of your parent.
Yeah.
The way people look at you and talk about you. And in saying that too, I was very lucky with the jail system. My mum always made me feel like I was protected.
Mm-hmm.
Even though she wasn't around, she made me feel safe. And I guess when you go into a jail and knowing that that person's on the other end of the walk through the jail, I think that always got me through. But compared to now, like, my life is pretty good. I think the support that kids need, the support that kids need whose parents are in jail, is they need so much love. I just think of my younger self, and she just really needed a hug. I'm sorry, I'm going to try not to cry. But
I'm going to try not to cry either.
I'm sorry. I don't know. The feelings I had at that age, I couldn't bear another, even to think of another child feeling like that.
It's heartbreaking to think that, you know, and I think I'm a parent, I think of my own children, and, you know, you'd want to protect them, but to think that the people that they're staying with, you know, they're not getting what they need, that's really hard.
Yeah.
And also, I guess, how did you resolve kind of your love for your mum? And you said, you know, she was sounds like a pretty great parent, but then there's the other side of something that happened and that caused her to be in jail. Was it hard for you to kind of match up those things?
Yeah, definitely. I think from my own experience, just a side note on that is, I would just for kids, I would really say anyone looking after or caring a child that's in this situation, don't hide or lie about what's happening to that kid's parent. They'll find out the real answers through either other kids or family relatives, or it's a really horrible way to find out about something.
Yeah.
And that often happened to me. I was lied to or told things that were happening that weren't. And hearing a rumor side of it, which isn't even the true version. My mum got in trouble inside a few times, and what I was told, what happened versus what my mum actually told me, was very different as well. And, I would just say anyone that's looking after them, just let that kid tell their story and continue to let them talk about it and answer as many questions as they have about it, because no one let me ask questions, which I really struggled with. In regards to who my mum was versus her jail persona, I'm trying to think how to explain it. I think the best thing for me has been talking about it. In vain, like, the discredit I made to the psychologist before, I had one really good one that actually told me, I was so worried about people finding out about it and how people were going to know and all that sort of stuff. And she told me to just keep telling people because then they couldn't control my story.
That's a good point.
She said if I constantly told people what was going on and if I was clear about it, which that was the only best, I think I've lived my life by that lady saying that, which goes to show you what else she told me because I have no idea what her name is. I can vision her face, I guess is good enough, which was really weird because then years later, I don't know if you've ever read Nora Ephron's book, Heartburn.
Can I just say, that is one of my absolute favourite books.
Really?
I can't believe you've said that. It is on my top five all time. I've got this much loved copy of it in my bookshelf. It is, yes, I love it.
So you would know that.
I love that book so much.
Yeah. So you would know that Vera quote. And I was like, why do you feel you have to turn everything into a story?
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. And it was funny because years later I read that book and I don't know to this day if that psychologist was just re-quoting that to me and that was the only part I got out of it. But yeah.
That's, yeah. I'm gonna reread that book. I'm gonna get it off the bookshelf tonight. Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, it's a great book. It's only a short read, but it's really powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's true. It's like about controlling your narrative. Telling your truth, I guess.
And I think it's really important that kids or teenagers in these situations know that, because I wasn't told that. I was told to hush mine, and I was told people didn't want to know it. And I can tell you right now, by me telling my story, like the amount of people I have that I can lean on if I need to, whereas if I had have not told people the stuff I've gone through, or I don't tell everyone my full story because that would be crazy, but I tell people certain parts, and the networks I've got from that, even when I was a teenager, after that psychologist, I just had people try a bit harder with me if I was going through a rough day or I was struggling a bit. And I don't think back then teachers knew how to deal with me, and the teachers that knew, I guess. I just don't think they had the skills, I guess, or they were, I guess the skills were not the right, they were taught the skills.
Yeah. And I guess maybe just, they don't know what to do, so they don't do anything. That's sometimes a reaction.
Yeah, and I think there's, like, such a great healing process. I think people underestimate the true power of healing through someone being able to relate to what you've gone through, even just on the smallest scale. Like, it could be the most minimal thing that they can relate to you on. And that itself can be so empowering, and it can just make you feel so recharged if you just find just one person that can. And I think in my process, if I was younger and I had to come across that, it would have helped me a lot more. I think as I'm older, I've gotten, my emotional intelligence obviously has increased, and I know I can flag things when things are going wrong and if I'm not feeling well or stuff like that. But when I was a kid, I had no idea. I think, like, again, I just brought up Maria Ephraim, but I think a huge part of my healing was literature. My mum brought books into our life so young. She read to us every night, and she made sure we knew that was a haven. Again, she had no idea that that was going to happen. I would read every night. I would read as much as I could. She would always purchase us books and send them to us. I definitely think it helped me and healed me. I found my own heroes through books. I found my own role models through books. I was obsessed with Harry Potter. I sort of thought I was Harry Potter for years. I was just waiting for my Hogwarts. Because it was the only way to get out of what I was going through.
Yeah.
I think I was very fortunate that my mum put those qualities in me young. I think, again, I'm incredibly fortunate that her crime was pre-internet.
True.
I feel so much for children whose parents can be Googled and their crime is there for anyone to see. I just couldn't imagine. But also in saying that, I guess those children have more access to stuff than what I did.
Yeah.
They can read other people's experiences and they can get help online. I'm sure there's way more options online that they can call and contact through.
Yeah.
I think the biggest negative, the lasting impact of mom in jail is I have been brought up in a scary world. I know there's women that kidnap women. I know, and they work for men. And I just remember so vividly when my mom got out, she had her wallet open or her purse. And I remember I was so upset that she didn't have a photo of my sister and I in her wallet and our high school photo. And again, because I just want to be normal like everyone else, to stand a theme in my life. But well, back then, and my mum went off. And the way she went off was, it was in such a way when your mum yells at you as though it's common sense, something you should know. And the way she said it was, and it, still remember it as clear as day, was, of course, I wouldn't have your photo in my purse. And I was like, why? Obviously shocked and upset. And she was like, because if you were to have, if I was to have you and your sister's high school photos in here, she's like, first of all, they would be up to someone that saw my wallet. And she's like, and she knows people too. Well, she knew people in jail. She wasn't associated with them. That would actually steal women's wallets for people. And it would have the children's ages, the school emblem, and that person's address on it. So your license was in it. And she was like, I would never do that. And yeah, I still think about that regularly. And all my friends would never have their kids' photos in the wallets because of that. And we weren't allowed to have our names on our necklaces or anything like that. Because she was like, yep, that's how someone can kidnap you. That's how someone can kidnap you. Like, all those things, like your name on your backpack.
Yeah.
Inside the backpack. And yeah, I've had a very unsheltered life, I guess, in regards to that as well.
You've
it's
had
been
a...
Me very aware of things.
Yeah, you've got a glimpse of the dark side of life, I guess.
Yeah. I know when you guys interview Narelle, and she talks about her PTSD a lot and just the things that she's scared of, I can fully relate. When she's talking, I feel myself nodding sometimes just because I am just so aware of how quickly people can turn evil. And, yeah, I've had quite a lot of experience seeing it go down, but, my mum would just freak us out too sometimes as we got older as well. Like if we went to parties and stuff like that, if we walked home, she would tell us to use the windows of like people's houses or shop windows to make sure no one was following us, and to always like read out the street name as you walked past, even if our phone was dead, because someone was less likely to kidnap you if you were telling people exactly where you were, or to like abduct you or attack you. And she'd always said, even if you were half an hour walk away, to say, oh yeah, I'm just 5 minutes away. She'd like, just say it constantly. And I guess most people don't get taught that.
No, and that all stems from, I know we didn't go into it too much, but that all stems from the reasons why what happened, isn't it?
Yeah. It don't get me wrong, I am hypervigilant, but it's not like I can't leave my house or anything like that. I'm just aware that there's bad people out there, and probably more aware as well, I think, I freak my friends out sometimes.
I'm sure people will be listening who'll be able to relate, and also people will listen and this will be an eye-opener. So what's life like for you now? It sounds like you're doing pretty well and you're pretty busy.
I'm doing really well. Don't get me wrong, I do have anxiety. I think I'm quite fortunate. It's more the high-functioning kind. I want to do everything and now, which can often be my downfall.
I relate to that a lot.
It's hard. And we can put on a good face. I think that may stem from childhood. I can smile when I don't want to smile. But the problem is I will crash hard.
Yeah.
And I guess you're probably the same. I will just get to a stage where it's like I need to sleep and people would drain me. And it's only probably been the last few years I've worked out really how to meditate, and I've done a few mindfulness practice courses, and I've learned, to go on a walk or to stay at home if I really need to. I can say no to things, that's fine. I've also learned to ask for help, not to do it all myself, which took a very long time to come to terms with. Yeah, it's weird though. I've actually learned it gets really bad if I stay at home too long. Mm-hmm. So if I stay at home if I've got a cold or a flu, I don't want to leave the house, and it gets really, everything's too much. But I've worked out that if I constantly push my comfort zone, so doing a random art class or attending, there was this workshop a couple of months ago I attended with some friends that was learning to be a kid again, which was really fun, super out of my comfort zone. And if I constantly do stuff like that, then the little things don't seem that big to me. And then the big things don't seem as enormous to me, so I've got to constantly do that. But I have some triggers that come across. I was living in a shared house a couple of years ago, and it was when Wentworth first came out.
Yep.
And I didn't know the context or plot confident with or anything. I don't know where I was living and how I, like, what planet I was living on, that I somehow missed that, and no one actually was like, hey, this show might actually be something you're into or might be a trigger for you. And they were all watching it on, I think it was just normal TV. And I came in, like, with my dinner, you know, living in a shared house.
Yep.
Do your 10, 15 minutes of just chatting to people and then go about your day. And I was eating, and all of a sudden, one of the characters came on in that uniform, and I had a full-on panic attack.
Yep.
Now, I don't know your shared house life experiences, but...
I've got a bit, yeah.
Yeah. You don't always know all your shared house.
No, you don't.
So it's, like, pretty intense for someone that, like, you're living with that doesn't really know you to see that go down. But the problem is they all thought I was choking on my food. They didn't realise that I was just, there was just tears streaming down my face. And thank heavens, I was living with a nurse at the time, and she actually realised straight away that it was a panic attack. But everyone else was, like, pushing my food from me. And then I had to have this awkward conversation with all of them and explain it. But it's not something I would normally have to explain to, you know, three people you're living with that you barely see.
Yeah.
And again, that kind of had a stigma in a way, because I guess they were a bit like, thought I had some deep issues. But, yeah. And movies where kids get taken away from their mother, oh, my God.
Yeah, that would be, like, really hard.
Read plots sometimes before I go to movies with people I'm not that familiar with.
I
think it's just, I know that whatever resolved in my past will need to be resolved time and time again. And I think that really comes with really only wisdom of age, I guess. And I think that all has a lot to do with acceptance and forgiveness. I think the best thing is to just think I'm not my mum's crime. It's probably the best, strongest part. I think the other thing too is my mum made sure I was exposed to people that had it worse than me at a young age. So I knew, like, I could always have I always had it better. I think that's really important that people do that with children. Oh, yeah, sorry. I've gone down a whirlwind.
No, that's okay. Because you said you do volunteer work. I mean, you're studying, you're working, life's pretty normal.
I'm doing, it gets better. Life is really good now. Like you said, I have a wonderful job. I have a really good friend network. I have an incredible partner. Sometimes it shocks me how well I'm supported. It's beyond my own comprehension sometimes. My friends often comment, they're just always saying just how much of a wonderful friend I am and stuff like that. And they're often super, just, I guess, marveled at how balanced I turned out and how resilient I am. Like, when people are having a shitty day at work, I'm just like, oh, this is nothing.
Yeah.
Even my boss sometimes is always like, you're always so positive and happy. I just don't get it. And I'll be like, well, this is why. I think it's just given me a really good balance in life. And I think, I'm studying at the moment. But it's been the whole starting of studying. It's all kind of come into line, which has been great. It's always been that thing for me whenever I come up with something or all these things kind of drop into my path, I guess. It's always just a really easy cruise into it. And I don't know if that's purely just because I've had it so hard that life's like, all right, time for a break now.
That's right. And it sounds like you don't take things for granted. Something, you know, if people who haven't had as the challenges you've had, you know, we can, amplify just silly stuff that isn't a problem, but you really don't take things for granted, and that is a really, you know, interesting thing to remember, I guess, for people listening. Yeah. For me, I'm going through stuff in my head as I'm talking to you. It's really very powerful.
We would like to extend another thank you to Amelia for sharing her powerful story with us. Now, we interview April Long, National Programs Manager for Shine for Kids, the only nationwide organisation that helps children and young people who have a parent in prison.
As far as I'm aware, and this is the only organisation of its type, isn't it?
Yeah, so we're the only, I guess, national charity that looks after supporting children with a parent incarcerated. So there's 75,000 around the country, and, yeah, we're the only organisation.
And how did Shine for Kids start, April?
Yeah, so Shine for Kids originally started as a group of concerned mothers, social workers, teachers, and family members who were really concerned about the disconnect between children and their parents once they went into custody. So it really started as a grassroots organisation over 35 years ago, and has continued to grow to provide those services, mainly in New South Wales, but also in Queensland and Victoria.
Okay, and so how do kids get engaged with Shine for Kids? So walk me through the process of what happens and how you support children of people in prison.
Yeah, absolutely. So we run a number of programs that specifically look after children and connect them with their parents. So we run in-visit support so that when a child actually goes into a correctional facility, which is a daunting experience, we're there to provide support for the child. We run child-friendly activities in that environment, and we also run our Child and Parent Days, which is for 4 hours during the school holidays. The carer, and a lot of the time it's a grandparent, it may be another family member, they're caring for the child and they put them into our care and they spend 4 hours with their parent without the carer there and, you know, doing activities that really facilitate that child-parent bond, because there may have been a number of years where there hasn't been any contact. So we're really there to facilitate that relationship and make sure that, you know, for that young person that they're not, I guess, further traumatised by the incarceration of their parent, because usually what's happening for that young person is they've got the stigma and shame of my mother or my father is in prison. They may have been experiencing family violence. They have poor educational outcomes. You know, they've got the emotional distress of being separated from their parent. And in a lot of cases, particularly with women, when a, you know, maternal incarceration happens, they're then placed in the care and protection system. So, you know, things change overnight. Suddenly they may be living with a foster carer, they might be living with a grandparent, they're separated from their brothers and sisters, they may have to attend a new school. So we're really there, I guess, to support them through that and make sure that they know that they're not alone, and that we can facilitate that connection with their parent.
And do you have to have permission of the parent to engage with the child, or is it the court that allows you to do it, or the carer? How does that work?
Yeah, so we get referrals from a number of places. Inmates themselves will talk to their caseworker and they may say, I haven't had contact with my child for a long time. We get school teachers saying that, you know, our student is struggling and we'd like you to facilitate that support. We get carers. In some situations, there may have been a relationship breakdown, so the other partner, mum or dad, doesn't want to go into the prison, but we'll actually supervise the visit. So we provide transport, we pick up that young person, we take them into the visit, and we give them mentoring and support to debrief after the visit. So our referrals come from a number of places. A lot of community organisations will reach out to us because, you know, they may have a young person as a client, but they don't really understand the unique challenges that they're experiencing having a parent incarcerated.
And what age range of children do you support?
Yeah, so we work from birth up until 18. So just to give you a bit of a snapshot, last year in New South Wales alone, we worked with 4,077 young people. Yeah. And I guess the age breakdown is that, you know, those young people are primarily aged from birth to 10. Mm-hmm. We do work with a lot of, you know, older children as well. But, yeah, the magnitude of the current issue is that, you know, 45% of New South Wales inmates have a parent of at least one child. We work with families where there's obviously more than, you know, one child, and trying to facilitate that relationship. And it's particularly Aboriginal women. You know, 32% of women in custody in New South Wales right now are Aboriginal. So how do we maintain that cultural connection to their mother? But, yeah, I guess the biggest concern that we have is that children of prisoners are actually 6 times more likely to end up in prison themselves. So we want to get in early and support them and make sure that we can, I guess, tackle that cycle of reoffending.
That's quite a shocking statistic, actually. I didn't realise that, that it was, you know, so high, that it's 6 times, you know, more likely to end up in prison than someone whose parent hasn't been in jail. Do you support kids as well in other ways other than, you know, accompanying them to the prison or keeping them in contact with mum and dad? Do you have, like, mentor programs?
Yeah, so we have some mentor programs that work in the juvenile justice space as well, because a lot of juvenile offenders actually have a parent in prison.
Yep.
And again, that's that cycle. So we run a program called Standards One, which is 3 months pre-release, 12 months post-release into the community, working with that juvenile to make sure they're supported with housing, employment, education. And I guess one of the, you know, the biggest growing need program delivery we're doing is education. So we actually work in primary schools in New South Wales, Victoria and Queensland to provide a tutor with mm-hmm. a young person whose parents in prison in the classroom and make sure they get that academic support. But then we also bring them together for camps. So, you know, it's for those young people, it's sometimes the first time they've been with other kids who have a parent in prison. And again, it just breaks down that isolation and I guess the stigma and shame and them thinking I'm the only one that's going through this. So we run those in Brimbank in Victoria, up in Townsville in Queensland and in Goulburn and Kempsey in New South Wales. So it's something we're really looking to grow because we know that, I guess, education is really the key to tackling intergenerational offending and making sure that these young people have positive mentors in their lives.
And has it been a neglected space? I mean, I know your Shine for Kids is doing a lot of work, but is this a space that is sort of desperately needing more money, more help, more support?
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely a neglected space in the sense that, you know, in this country we have a tough on crime approach and people often think that, you know, when you're providing services to children, you're providing services to inmates or offenders. And that's why we often call the children of incarcerated parents invisible victims because quite often there's no focus from an advocacy point of view, from a policy point of view around making sure that these young people are supported, they are seen, they are heard, and they're getting the appropriate support that they need. Otherwise, we're just going to see that cycle keep continuing. So, you know, as an organisation, we're the only national organisation and we're in, as I said, New South Wales, Queensland and Victoria, and there are other grassroots organisations doing amazing things in other states, but it's very small and it's quite isolated. So, you know, we are desperately, constantly looking for more funding to make sure that, you know, these kids get the support they need. We largely run off volunteers. We have over, you know, 300 volunteers that give up a lot of their time to really address this issue. But I think it's time, in this country that we actually invest in making sure that these children have the best future that they can have.
And because it just prevents problems down the track, doesn't it? Like, as you said, these children ending up in jail themselves, you know, they'll have better educational outcomes if they get help. And do you support the kids when the parent comes out of jail and they're reconnecting, or how does that work?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a massive time again of change, that reintegration. And that's why we advocate for keeping the child and the parent connected. And we know that that is a protective factor for recidivism, you know, if a person is connected to their children. So one of our programs in particular, Belonging to Family program that runs in Kempsey, is dedicated for 12 months making sure that those children and family members are supported to reintegrate back into the community, make sure that they continue to have a positive relationship with their child. So that's a big piece of the work that we do to make sure that, you know, they're not reoffending and that the children have a continual relationship. I mean, I think the economic argument in itself is big enough that the cost of, building new prisons and incarcerating people, and if we can put that those funds into early prevention intervention and support those families prior to incarceration and then post-release, that's where we're going to have a real impact. That's where we're going to see real change, because our families will be healthy and strong, and you know, children will have positive relationships with their parents.
And April, you're the National Programs Manager for SHINE. How long have you been with the organisation for?
My relationship with SHINE you know, has been since I was working at Gilbert and Tobin as a paralegal. So I actually used to volunteer with the organisation, and I've now been in the national manager role for about 5 months now. So it's a really exciting time to come into the organisation and really consolidate our programs, pull together all of our evidence of the amazing work that's, you know, I got to see from, I guess, working in the community. I was previously at the Smith Family and at the National Centre of Indigenous Excellence, and everybody in the space knows what SHINE does. But it's been an amazing experience to actually work within the organisation with, you know, amazing staff that have been doing incredible work for a really long time.
If you're able to share like a little anecdote or story, what's something that's really made your heart sore, you know, from doing this work, like an interaction or a story or something that's happened that's just made you think this is incredible what we do?
Yeah, I think one of the greatest experiences I've had is when I first commenced and being down in Victoria and seeing one of our leadership camps in practice. It was a really great opportunity to see these kids coming together and knowing, like I said, that they're not the only one and they're not isolated. And we did some pre and post data, and I was sitting there with a young person and, you know, going through, you know, how did you find the camp and, you know, what did you like most about it? And, of course, you know, the kids went fishing and they had beach activities and all of that. But, you know, 80% of the kids at the camp said that, you know, they grew more confident. And, you know, one of the young people that I was working with said that I came on the camp to not feel so lonely. And, you know, I feel so much more supported now. And I think for him, he was very much isolated, dealing with this on his own, and I got to hear his story and what he'd been going through. But, yeah, I think it was 60% of the kids, you know, said that the reason why they came on the camp was to be with other kids like them. And I think that's what we do, is that's what it's really about, is breaking down that stigma. But, I mean, every day when you go into a correctional facility and you see children just so happy to see their parent, and despite everything that's happening around them and, you know, the environment that they're in, that's all seems to be removed. They're just so happy to see their parent and to connect with them. So I get to see that on a daily basis. And that to me is why we do the work that we do.
That's because, you know, kids just love their mum and their dads, don't they? That's just at the core of it. They just love their parents. And yeah, you know, it seems like childhood's sort of tricky at the best of times, but you put in the mix some challenges like this and it's just, I don't know, it's quite incredible to think that kids get through this kind of stuff.
Oh, and that's the greatest gift, is seeing the resilience of these young people. They know that mum or dad may have made a mistake, and, you know, we advocate for not having what we call the conspiracy of silence. Kids are really able to understand and to deal with difficult things if they've got the right support, and they can see that mum and dad is okay, and they can, you know, just play a board game with them and tell them about their homework and you know, how they're going at footy. And that's what it's about, is keeping that relationship strong, so that when they do come home, they have that relationship. They're not, you know, suddenly have a stranger in their home. That's their mum or their dad, and, you know, they've spent time with them and they have a strong relationship.
It sounds like an incredible organisation. Now, how can we help? Like, what, we'll have a lot of people listening to this. How can we help SHINE for Kids?
Yeah, I mean, one of the, you know, greatest things that have enabled us to survive with limited funding is our amazing volunteers. So, you know, having people who are able to transport young people, be mentors, just be there in the prison environment, it's an amazing, rewarding thing to do and to be able to give back. So that's something, you know, if you head to our website, we have really thorough volunteer induction program, and we simply wouldn't survive without our volunteers. So for those passionate about volunteering, that's certainly a great organisation to get involved in. And, you know, for those who do want to give back and, you know, do have the means to provide, you know, be able to provide financial support, that would be, you know, greatly appreciated. That's something that we're always looking to do, because we know that we're only reaching a certain percentage of young people that need our support. We're only in 11 out of 30 prisons in New South Wales, and we want to make sure that every young person gets this support. And we can only do that through, you know, partnerships with, you know, corporates, small business, and also just individuals who, you know, want to live in a country where we're supporting children to be connected to their parents and, you know, have the best possible future they can have.
Thank you for downloading Australian True Crime, and thank you to our team, which is one person, Bartholomew Heeran. If you enjoy the podcast, please take the time to leave us a nice review and five stars, and to follow us on Facebook.